As Larry mentioned, it's good to see each and every one of you here as we come together to study and to worship God. If you're visiting with us, we're happy that you are here, and we invite you to come back whenever you have the opportunity. We'll meet again tonight at 5 o'clock for another worship, and we're going to be continuing our series of lessons on the parables of Jesus. Tonight we're going to talk about the parable of the Good Samaritan. So if you can be here, we would appreciate that. Larry mentioned the devotional slash brunch that the women will be having Saturday. Ryan's like, I wish we had a men's thing. I was like, I have the solution for that. Tomorrow night is the men's monthly Bible study. And what we do is once a month, we get together at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at my house, the men, and we're studying from the book of James. And we are in James chapter 5. And for those that want to be a part of class but can't make it there, we also do Zoom for that class. And so that is an opportunity for the men of the congregation. If you need directions to my house, feel free to ask me or John or Larry or one of the men of the congregation. We'll get that information to you. It's good to be back. I have to say, I heard a couple of things happen while I was away. Number one, Austin preached, and so when I went to upload his sermon to the website, I noticed how small the file was, and every time Austin preaches, he hits that 20-minute mark like consistently, and I'm like, Austin, you're making me look bad, because I go 30-plus, and then I heard Lee, I got this through a text, Lee's like, I'm glad when Travis is in here. I don't know what the context of that was, but I said, I thought you were my friend. He said, I am your friend. That's why I said, I'm glad when you're not here. I'm like, it doesn't make sense. But it is good to be back. I was in Oregon last weekend for a wedding of my nephew. Got to be with my brother and spend time with him and also see my mother and my sister and see family. So it was really, really a good experience. But it's good to be back. We're talking this year, from time to time, on the subject of light as a theme in Scripture. And the idea of this comes from Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 8, where we as Christians are called to walk in the light. There's something about that sentiment that we need to take account of, as it is an instruction, a command given to us by the inspired writer Paul. And that there's a certain way that we are to walk, and that way is characterized by God and by Jesus and is demonstrated through His Word. All three of those elements are described as light. This morning we want to continue that discussion by wanting to start by asking this question, what is light? You know, it's a pretty simple thing that we take for granted. What is light? You know, you might tell someone, turn on the lights. Or you walk outside, and he's like, wow, the light is bright. The sun is bright. We understand the concept of light, and yet when we try to define it, it becomes very difficult, doesn't it? I like what the Encyclopedia Britannica said about this. It says, no single answer to the question, what is light, satisfies the many contexts in which light is experienced, explored, and exploited. The physicist is interested in the physical properties of light. The artist in the aesthetic appreciation of the visual world. Through the sense of sight, light is a primary tool for perceiving the world and communicating within it. Light from the sun warms the earth, drives the global warm weather patterns, and initiates the life-sustaining process of photosynthesis. When I read that definition, there was one aspect that drew my attention, and that is light is a primary tool for perception. In John chapter 8 and verse 12, as well as in John chapter 9 and verse 5, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. We talked a short time last month about this. We want to go back to it again in John chapter 9 and ask, what is it that Jesus is stating when he makes that declaration? I am the light of the world. I would suggest that some of it is akin to what that encyclopedia defined light as. Light is a primary tool for perceiving. Jesus being the light is a primary tool for perception. Jesus as the light gives insight, doesn't he? He opens our eyes to something that we need to understand. He gives insight to where there had been ignorance. Insight into what? Insight into things such as sin, suffering, and the need for a Savior. With that in mind, let's look at John chapter 9, because I want us to focus on the context of what Jesus says here and its implications for us today. In John chapter 9, we have the story where Jesus heals a man that was born blind. I know it's a lengthy reading, but I want us to take the time to read this, because what it's going to communicate to us is that Jesus illuminates the darkness of this world. He illuminates the darkness of this world. So follow with me in John chapter 9, beginning at verse 1. As he passed by, that is Jesus, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the work of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world," Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva, and he anointed the man's eyes with mud and said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he is like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes open?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I went and I washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." They brought him then to the Pharisees, the man who had formerly been blind. And it was the Sabbath day when Jesus had made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was division among them. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him since he has opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews didn't believe that he had been blind and that he received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight. And they asked them, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But how he sees, we do not know. Nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he is of age, he will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." So for the second time they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "Whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." And they said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And he answered them, "I told you already, and you wouldn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" And they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him.
Never since the world began is it heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered him, you were born in utter sin, and you would teach us? And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they cast him out. And having found him, said, do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, and who is he that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Jesus said, for judgment I came into the world, that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind. What a remarkable series of events. Jesus starts off and he says there in verse 5, I am the light of the world. Why does he say that? How does this give us insight? How does this give us information? How does this inform our intellect to know more about Jesus? I want to break it down into three specific subjects. First of all, how the light is given about a dark subject. Jesus sees this man and he is blind. He's blind from birth is what the information John gives us is. And his disciples ask this question. Why is he blind? They're perplexed. And they ask a question that for them was not a perplexing question to ask. They just didn't have the answer. And the question that they ask is, whose fault is it? Is this man suffering from blindness because of some sin his parents committed? Or is he suffering from blindness because of some sin he committed? By the way, that's a kind of interesting concept. He's blind from birth, and they're saying, did he do something? Almost as saying kind of the concept of being born in sin, which is against what Scripture said. But they say, well, what's the reason behind this? And that wasn't uncommon. You go back to the book of Job, and Job, which is pre-flood, faced the same sentiment of Job's sin results in punishment. Righteousness results in reward. You can even go after Jesus, and in Acts chapter 28, when Paul is shipwrecked on the island of Malta, and a snake comes out of a fire and latches onto him. You remember how the people thought? He had to be a horrible individual that escaped his imprisonment, and so now this snake is exacting God's retribution, his judgment. See, what they believed is also similar today. If a man, as many might believe, is healthy and prosperous, that means God's smiling on him. And if he is suffering, that means God's punishing him. But Jesus really doesn't answer in great detail that question. What he says is, it's not that that man sinned or his parents. And he kind of leaves it there. But what he does in doing that is he presents a new perspective, a new insight, a new information for them to conceive of, to think about. Notice what Jesus says in verse 3. It was not that this man or his parents sinned, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. What Jesus points out here is that while the disciples are looking to blame someone for what's going on in this man's life, Jesus doesn't look at it as an opportunity to blame. Rather, he views it as an opportunity to glorify God. See, the gospel gives life a new perspective. Without the concept of God as overall and God being good, in James chapter 1 and verse 17, God is the giver of all good things. Without that concept, what do? We face things and it's very easy to blame.
what Jesus says is, no, we take our opportunities and we view them as potential to glorify God, to take our tragedies and turn them into triumph, to take our despair and see hope rather than blame. You see, when we look through that prism of our lives are to glorify God, that gives a new perspective that they just didn't get. Look at your life. And what do you see? We all face tragedy. We all face difficult circumstances. Do we look at those as opportunities to blame? And if we do, who do we blame? Or do we look at them and we say, this is an opportunity to glorify God? Now, I'll be honest. Sometimes when we're in the midst of those situations, how we glorify God can be a little veiled, can't it? But what we do is we follow His word. We lean on Him, cast our cares and our anxieties on Him. That's how we glorify God. We glorify God in the midst of those circumstances by being ready to give an answer, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15, of the things that provide us hope. See, the gospel gives new vision to our lives, how we view things. But Jesus also gives a new perspective for timing, doesn't he? Look at verse 4. Because as soon as he says that, he turns around and he says, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. Jesus has this sense of the now, doesn't he? He has a sense of this present moment. The disciples are contemplating philosophical matters. Why is it that this man is blind? Jesus says, we're going to glorify God through this. And he immediately turns and he says, we got to do the work now. So while they're contemplating, Jesus is getting ready to act in that moment, now, not tomorrow, not next week, not next year. It's not, I'm going to glorify God by doing his work later. It's, I'm going to glorify God by doing his work now. And isn't that a perspective we need to undertake? To do God's work now? To act now to glorify him. Not later, but now to glorify him. And then Jesus says something in verse 7. He tells the man, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means being sent. So he went and he washed and came back seeing. See, in this, Jesus gives a new perspective for obeying. You have living, how we look at life, timing, now, obeying, to do. Realize a lot of the miracles Jesus did had something required. Whether it's the 10 lepers, when Jesus is cleansing them, what's he telling? He tells them, go show yourself to the priest. Or the feeding the 5,000. In order to do that, the boy had to give up his lunch of 5 loaves and 2 fish. For Lazarus to come forth, the stone had to be rolled away. There always had to be something. And this situation is no different. There had to be action. Jesus told this man, this is what you do. And isn't that the gospel? See, the gospel, living after the gospel, is a mean by which we glorify God. When do we do that? We got to do that in the now. And we have to do. So this man goes and he washes in the pool. However old he is, we don't know how old he is, but his sight is back, which is in and of itself an amazing thing. Having not seen since birth, to be able to see clearly, and to navigate his world. Now he comes back and Jesus isn't there. But what we find is there's some reactions to the light. See, we go from
a situation where there was physical suffering, and now we look at a situation where there is not physical blindness, but there is spiritual blindness, and how people reacted to Jesus and this miracle. The first group that we're introduced to in verse 8 is the neighbors. And what we find out about them is they were disinterested. And what I mean by that is, notice that the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man? They disagreed, didn't they? They couldn't decide who he was. But here's the thing. It says they were his neighbors. And it says they saw him every day. Now, I'm really bad at names. I really am. I get that. But if I met someone face to face, well, I might not remember their names. I remember, oh, I've met you before. That happened to us yesterday when Beth and I were out at a nursery. We were looking at plants, and a gentleman walks by us, and he's like, Mr. and Mrs. Walker. And I looked, and I'm like, okay, I recognize you. Beth recognized him right away. He lives in our neighborhood, and he works in SPEN and things like that as well. And he knew our name, and I recognized him, but if you ask me what his name was, I have no idea. But I knew him. How is it that these people were his neighbors and saw him every day and they couldn't figure it out? How is it they had these questions? He's not the man. Is he the man? I don't know. Is he? I don't know. What's that suggest? It suggests that they didn't really have any interest in him. He was just part of the environment. There's no care. There's no concern. There was no connection to that individual. And so what do? They just walk every day of their lives. They pass by him as he's sitting on the ground and he's asking for alms. And they step over him. They might look at him, glance at him, but then they turn away and they're more focused on where they're going. Isn't that kind of how people are today? We'll talk more about this tonight with the Good Samaritan. People around us suffering, struggling. Do we see them? Or do we take for granted to this extent that they just become part of the environment? And we don't notice. These people, they looked at him, they wondered who he was, and they really never truly identified him. That's how they reacted to this miracle. The Pharisees in verse 13 through verse 18, they disbelieve. He goes before them and they ask him how he received his sight. But they don't believe. And I chose the word disbelief for a very specific reason. Unbelief, the prefix un means not. Not having belief. Disbelief, dis, the prefix, means away. They moved away from belief. It's not that they didn't have belief. They moved away from it. They stepped away from what they could recognize. See, they looked at him, and it wasn't that they couldn't believe. It's that they chose not to believe. They chose to deny. And why is it they chose to deny? Because when they looked at this man and that the fact that there was a miracle that had been done, they said, no, this can't be a miracle because it happened when? On the Sabbath day. We're not going to believe because we have something in our mind that's saying, no, that's not going to work. One person said, when you do not want to believe, you will actually believe what you want. They wanted to believe what they wanted. They have a miracle done right in front of them, and instead of believing that this was done by Jesus, God in the flesh, they said, no, we're going to step away from belief, and we're going to remain where we want to remain. The third group is the parents. So they call on the parents. And what the parents do is they disclaim. They say, we know he's our son. We know that he's born blind. But what was their response? He's old enough. You ask him. We don't want to give a response. Why? Because they were afraid. And you look at that. Isn't that kind of how people are? That people fit into those categories? When we look at the light of Jesus and we see what Jesus did, what we do is some people will say, you know what? I just really don't care. It's just part of the environment, part of the world. I'm just going to move. And yeah, you know, there's people that hold beliefs, but I'm just going to step away from that. I'm not going to acknowledge it. Then you have people that move away from belief. That doesn't matter how much evidence you give. What they is, no, I just don't care. And there are some just like, oh, let's put an asterisk here. And don't really talk to me about it. You can talk to someone else about it. They're just afraid of answering the question. And so we have this movement from physical blindness to spiritual blindness. But what we see lastly is the one that was physically blind and had his eyes open physically was spiritually blind, but now has his eyes open spiritually. And there's an insight about the light that he gives us. Look at the reaction of the man who is born blind. When in verse 11 he speaks to the neighbors, and what he says to them in their confusion is that this man called Jesus. He says, there's a man called Jesus who made mud and anointed my eyes, said to go wash the pool of Siloam, and I went, I washed, and I received my sight. He says, it's Jesus. That's who did it. To the Pharisees who were bent on disproving the miracle, what's he do? In verse 17 of John chapter 9, he says he is a prophet. He comes from God. Look at him. This is Jesus. He's a prophet. In verse 25, he speaks in front of all, I think, and especially to the parents. And what's he say? He says to them, I was blind, now I see. But the most significant response is in verse 35. When Jesus heard that they cast the man out because he did what his parents were afraid to do, and that's acknowledge Jesus. Jesus finds him and he asks him, says, do you believe in the Son of Man? That term for the Messiah. And the man responds, he says, who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you've seen him. Get the significance of that phrase. You've seen him. The man was blind when he left Jesus to go to the pool of Siloam. He didn't see Jesus after Jesus healed him for the pool. And what Jesus says is, you have, past tense, seen him. Not that you're seeing him, you have seen him. In other words, Jesus is not acknowledging his physical sight. Jesus is acknowledging his spiritual sight. That he has seen Jesus as being a prophet from God. And he says, who is he? He says, you have seen him. And it is he who is, present tense, speaking to you. And his response was, Lord, I believe. And he worships him. To the neighbors, he said, it's Jesus. To the Pharisees, he says, he's a prophet. He's from God. To the parents and all that were around, he says, a miracle has been done by this Jesus, the prophet. I was blind, now I see. To Jesus, he says, Lord, I believed, and he worshiped Jesus. Jesus is the light of the world. And when he says that, he surrounds it with this event of something great that happened that day. By the power of God, a man who was born blind is given physical sight. But something greater happened that day. Because that man who was in sin and spiritually blind saw Jesus as the light of the world. That's the light that Jesus brings. Jesus did not come to bring physical sight. He gave people physical sight, but that was not his purpose. He came to provide all men spiritual light. A light that is the message that we can have a new life in him. A light that new life in him is one where we have a new perspective on life. A new perspective for timing. And a new perspective for obedience. A life where we can be the sons of his Father and heirs of God. In verse 39, Jesus says it very clearly when he says, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things, and they said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." What's happened in that circumstance? Jesus is acknowledging that some people see the light. Some people see the truth of Jesus, and they would rather stay in that position of disbelief or that position of the neighbors who are just disinterested, or that position of the parents who we don't want to answer. We're afraid to answer. My question for us this morning, has the light shined in your life? He is the light of the world. By him and no one else can we have salvation. He asked the man, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And that man, when he found out exactly who it was he was talking to, he said, "I believe." Is that how we responded to Jesus? The point where we find in our hearts and in our minds that Jesus is the Son of God, do we say, "Lord, I believe"? Maybe you're not a child of God this morning. You haven't obeyed the gospel. He is the light of the world. Are you ready to say, "Lord, I believe"? If you are, then why not come to him? Come to him in obedience. Worship him, submit to him. How do we do that? We do that by changing our life. He's provided the way through baptism where our sins can be washed away, and we start that new life where we become his disciples, to follow him, to be children of God. Maybe the light shined in your life at one point and something is darkening that life. Look back to Jesus. If your perspective of what's going on in your life has changed and drawn you away from Jesus, go back to Jesus. Because how can we face the things of this world without him? Because one day, what I look forward to is one day, this will cease. As Revelation tells us, there'll be no more tears, no more sorrow, no more pain. It'll be gone. And all we will have before us is the light of glory. The glory of God. The glory of Jesus. What a day that will be. I see Sister Jean up here just smiling ear to ear. And that's a glorious thought, isn't it? But if we're not his followers, if we're not his children, if we're not his disciples, that's not for us. It's available for all. But you got to make the decision.
Will you worship at the feet of Jesus and believe in him? If we can help you this morning, why not come forward while we stand and sing this song?